And so 2 Corinthians 6:14 through 17. We talked about this. We're talking about what it means to be under his feet, what it means to be a true church, to be what Jesus established us to be, not what we've become, not what we think we should be, what he called us to be. So we're still in the under his feet category, the series, whatever. We talked about, we got to the church, the marker, and we talked about what it meant to be a church. There were some things I told you that we might add some more, but we wasn't going to take away. But to be a church means to be a separate people. It means to be united. It means to have boldness, and it means that we live a life of sacrifice or denial, and that we also gather, but we gather to scatter. So we're going to talk about what it means to be a separate people today. So 2 Corinthians 6:14 through 17 says, "Do not be yoked together with unbelievers. For what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? Or what fellowship can light have with darkness? What harmony is there between Christ and Belial? Or what does a believer have in common with an unbeliever? What agreement is there between the temple of God and the temple of idols? For we are the temple of the living God, and God has said, 'I will live in them and walk among them, and I will be their God, and they will be my people.'" And then verse 17 says, "Therefore come out from among them and be separate." Be a separate people, saith the Lord. So the Lord says, because of all of that, "Therefore come out from among them and be separate." And so, what does it mean to be separate? And I have put so much time and thought into this, and I just knew that the Lord was trying to show me something, but I just didn't know what it was. And so I began to, you know, think and pray and study, and then once I found what I felt like he was trying to say, I was like, "God, that makes perfect sense." But it's almost something that you don't want to say. It's almost like you know it, but you don't want to say it, because when you say it, it isn't natural. But yet it's what the Bible says. But you can turn to Romans chapter 8. We're going to go through verses 5 through 18. Todd's going to put them up here. And so Romans 8, starting in verse 5, says, and you got to listen to this. I'm going to go back and highlight some things, but just take all of this in at once. "Those who live according to the flesh have their minds set on what the flesh desires." Okay? "But those who live in accordance with the Spirit have their mind set on what the Spirit desires. The mind governed by the flesh is death, but the mind governed by the Spirit is life and peace." Okay, verse 7. "The mind governed by the flesh is hostile to God. It does not submit to God's law, nor can it do so. Those who are in the realm of the flesh cannot please God." And so Paul, talking to the Romans, he's saying, "But you, however, are not in the realm of the flesh, but are in the realm of the Spirit, if indeed the Spirit of God lives in you. And if anyone does not have the Spirit of Christ, they do not belong to Christ." That's important. "But if Christ is in you, then even though your body is subject to death because of sin, the Spirit gives life because of righteousness." Not your righteousness, but His righteousness. "And if the Spirit of Him who raised Jesus from the dead is living in you, He who raised Christ from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies because of His Spirit who lives in you." Once again, what He did and all we did. All right, here we are, verse 12. "Therefore..." He said all that to be able to say this. "Therefore, brothers and sisters, we have an obligation. But it is not to the flesh to live according to it. For if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the misdeeds of the body, you will live. All right, so that's a lot of information. And so I want to highlight just a couple things. Verse 7. The mind governed by the flesh is hostile to God. Okay? It does not submit to God's law, nor can it. Okay? So, morality doesn't count. You may not be a liar and a thief if you're unsaved, but you're still a liar and a thief. Simply because the Apostle Paul makes it very clear. And Jesus, if you've broken one of them, you've broken them all. If you're a liar, you're automatically fall in the there's not separate categories. There's either you're a sinner or you're not. A sinner is someone who hasn't trusted in Jesus Christ, who hasn't followed Jesus Christ. And a righteous person is somebody who has accepted Jesus' teachings and follows them. Okay? Now, there's some terminology in there that we need to hammer out, okay? Because when I say somebody who has accepted Jesus, that's church talk. Jesus never said, accept me. Jesus said, follow me. Jesus said, if you want to be my disciples, keep my commandments. So somehow along the years, we've got to this notion that being a believer is somebody who just says a prayer and believes in Jesus. But as I demonstrated weeks and weeks ago, the Bible makes it clear that even the demons believe in Jesus and they even tremble at the name. So we have that church talk where we want to get people to accept Jesus. And that's not what Jesus was about, was not being accepting. It was about following. It was about making Him Lord. So verse 7 says that the mind governed by the flesh is hostile to God. In other words, you're either a friend of God or you're an enemy of God. There's no middle ground. If you're the righteous person, not righteous because of what you done, but righteous because of what He did, then you are on the side of a friend of God. If you're not, then you are an enemy of God. You are the sinner. You are the person in the flesh, not the spirit. So we got a lot of different terminology here. We got saved. We got redeemed. We got righteous. A mind governed by the Spirit. Over here we have the unsaved, we have the lost, we have the enemy of God, we have the mind that is governed by the flesh that is hostile to God. It's a coin. You've never in your life flipped a quarter and it landed straight up on solid ground. It might in the sand, but we know what sand is represented in the Bible. It's wavering. It isn't consistent. So I could stand up here for an hour and just flip a coin and it's never going to land straight up. It's going to be heads or tails. And that's what God's saying. You're trying to live a life with a coin that's straight up and down, and that don't work. That's not possible. You're either heads or you're tails. And so we have to be careful as a church how we present the gospel, but yet also at the same time how we even think about the gospel. Because every decision that we make is being governed by our minds, our hearts. And so that's why I want the word, when he says the mind governed by the flesh is hostile to God. It does not submit to God's law, nor can it. The word govern, if you look it up, it says to exercise continuous sovereign authority over. So the word govern means, so when he's saying right there, the mind that exercises continuous sovereign authority from the flesh is hostile to God. That's what he's saying. So what does the word sovereign mean? Because it's to exercise continuous sovereign authority. The word sovereign means to have complete and ultimate control over something or someone. So we would say that God is sovereign. He has ultimate control over any and everything. Does He control the winds? Yes. Does He control the rain? Yes. Does He control you? Maybe not in a sense that we might relate, but He does have control over you. We would agree that if God says, I'm taking them out of this world, you're going out of the world. You're not going to argue, fuss, or fight, or resist whatever God says. And so we believe in the sovereignty of God. Now within that, we would also believe in a free will. In other words, we wouldn't believe in complete, and this is not part of the message, but just to throw this out there, we would not believe in a complete predestination, but we would believe in predestination, but a predestination where free will still has a place. Okay? So in other words, and like I said, this is not even on here, but just to throw this out there, how do you have someone who's in complete and utter control of you, but yet you have free will? That's a difficult thing to understand, right? You have complete and free will to sit here or to get up and walk out, but yet God is completely in control of whether you get up and walk out or you sit here. And a lot of that, and this would be a great, you know, Bible study, but it's deep. But we also believe that there's sovereignty in free will, because God gives you the right to pick or choose. But now, if God determined today that you were going to get up and walk out, you're going to get up and walk out, and you're going to think it's by your free will, but it's probably not. And so we see that with Pharaoh. You know, we see that with other people in the Bible. Matter of fact, we just talked about this a few weeks ago. When we were talking about Genesis, God had the cross laid out at the beginning of Genesis. It had to come about. It wasn't going to, no man was going to stop that from happening. It was already predetermined. So there is that sovereignty, but God, what it is God works in man to bring about His will. So when we go back to the mind is governed by the flesh, what we're basically saying is that the mind is sovereign over the flesh. And so you're acting out and you're doing these things. And some, like I said, some of these things may be good. They may be good deeds, but they don't get counted as righteousness. Only the righteousness counts to a degree, if you get what I'm saying. Like when you stand there and before God, and the Bible talks about how that all your deeds will be laid out and they will be put in a fire, and only those deeds that were good, that were righteous, will remain. Then everything that you did, that even though it was good, but it wasn't righteous, it's just going to burn up. And it's not going to be accredited to you for that. Now that's, if I was preaching this to a lost person was sitting right here, and they're sitting here going, what in the world is he talking about? Because this is for the church. They're not going to understand this. This is like giving a rack of ribs to a two-month-old. They can't handle that. They're not ready for that yet. But at the same time, this is not coming in and a grown man sitting down at a supper table and being handled by a bottle and a pacifier. This is meat, and this is what God is saying. So those who are in the realm of the flesh cannot please God. I didn't say it. The Bible said it. God willed it to be said, and Paul wrote it, and it just is what it is. Skip down to verse 12, Ty. So it goes on to say, therefore, all that stuff we talked about, therefore, brothers and sisters, we have an obligation. Okay. The definition of obligation is an act or course of actions to which a person is morally or legally bound. It is a duty or a commitment. So when Paul says, therefore, brothers and sisters, we have an obligation. We have a moral and a legal duty to act. And it's a commitment to act how? We have an obligation to act out of the Spirit, not the flesh. Okay? Remember, we're talking about being a separate people. We're not talking about becoming a good person. We're talking about being a separate people. Why? Because that's what God called us out. He called us out of the world and into this realm of spirit, not flesh. So the condition of being morally or legally bound to do something is a debt of gratitude for a service or a favor, however you want to look at it. But we, if we are have been called out, if we are of the Spirit, now we have an obligation. We're bound. It's not a, I don't really know. There's no more of that. There's no more of that. So, as we were talking about, the mind governed by the flesh is hostile to God. It does not submit to God's law, nor can it do so. And so we get down to, we get back to where we was at the beginning, 2 Corinthians 6:17. Therefore, come out from them and be separate, says the Lord. So, what does it mean to be separate? And as I thought about this throughout the weeks, I just thought, I'm confused, Lord. Like, I mean, we can't just go buy some land and all of us build houses and put up a wall around it and never come out. So how do we do this? Like, what does this even mean? Like, how do we separate ourselves from these people? And as I began to think and to pray and to study and everything, at one point I said, Lord, I know you're trying to say something, but I just don't know what it is. I just don't know what it is. And it was sometime last week, it just kind of hit me like a ton of bricks. And so here it is. And it's very, we become separate. Well, let me go back. Let me take one step back. Because I asked myself, how did Jesus eat with sinners and tax collectors, but yet keep himself separate? You know what I'm saying? Like, you probably work with non-believers. So how do we navigate this? Like, how do we go into a workplace and be united with people that are not believers, but yet we're supposed to be separate? Because if you go back, as stated earlier, don't be yoked together with unbelievers. You know what that's in reference to? Huh? Well, yeah, but it's reference to two ox being yoked together to plow a field. Well, what are the ox doing? They're working. So when you stop and you think about this, you think, how do we do this? You know, how do we go to work and yet what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? Or what fellowship can light have with darkness? What harmony is there between them? What agreement is there between the temple of God and the temple of idols? Therefore, come out and be separate. And so, like I said, I really, really struggled with this because I know that God isn't calling us out of the world. I know that. You know that. So what is it? And it just, like I said, okay, so now I'm back to where I was. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. We become a separate people, and we work alongside non-believers. We work alongside people who think they're believers but don't act like believers. And we work with fellow believers all together. All the while, we are not influenced by them. And there's the key word. We're not influenced by them. So we become a separate people by being influenced by the Spirit, not the flesh. Okay, so when everybody at work is taking a 20-minute break and they're only supposed to take a 15-minute break, and you know it's costing production, you take a 15-minute break. Does that make sense? You become separate. And everybody else is going, ah, man, nobody cares, nobody knows. You do not let them influence you. When you go into a sinner's home, as Jesus did, a tax collector's home, you can eat, you can fellowship, you can share light with darkness, but you cannot let them influence you. The Word influences you. The Spirit influences you. And you do what the Word says, not what your buddy that's not following the Spirit says. So we give them no, and I mean no, influence over us. None. Zero. If the boss comes to you and says, hey, I need you to sign this paperwork saying that we did this even though we didn't do this, you got a decision to make. Lie or be separate. If it costs you your job, I don't know what to tell you. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know what to tell you. You can either be of the light and make the right decision that Jesus would make, or you can go, ah, it's just a little lie. Nobody's going to get hurt. And you can justify it, but you know for a fact Jesus wouldn't have. And that's who we're supposed to be following. So it gets tricky. And it gets tough. We eat with the tax collectors, we eat with the sinners, but we do not act or like them, nor are we influenced by them. And so to be a separate people means that we do what the Word says, no matter the cost. That's why Jesus said, look, before you even think about picking up this cross, you need to do some soul searching and decide if this is what you really want to do. Because it isn't going to be easy. And you're going to be mistreated. You're going to be hated. You're going to be ridiculed. You're going to be persecuted. Yeah. And we would look and we would say, you know what, I don't really think I've ever been persecuted. Well, maybe we've never really stood for the truth. You know what I mean? I mean, maybe we've never really stood up for the actual truth. Because if you were around people and you were constantly saying, I'm not doing that, that isn't right, and you were to say, well, we're not going to do it that way. I'm the one that makes decisions and we're not doing it that way. As parents, we've all made decisions that our kids didn't like, and guess what? They didn't really like us for it at times. Sorry, I didn't like y'all at times. That's just the way it is. She didn't like you at times, okay? That's what happens. They want to go do something and you don't think it's safe and you tell them no, or you don't like it and you say no and they get mad at you, and guess what? All of a sudden now they don't like you. You think, well, they'll come back around. Yeah, they probably will. But what if we were out here doing that in society? You know what I mean? And we were standing up for the truth, and we were standing up and we were pleading our case for what's right and what's wrong. We might not be liked as much. So ultimately it comes down to that our bodies and our actions are governed by our mind and our mind. All right, so what does that mean about our mind? So I pull up Romans 12. So our bodies and our actions, which are governed by our mind, must be, as Romans 12:1 says, and you know this, I read it and that's not long ago, and this is the answer to everybody's problems. This is the answer to the church's problems. It's that I'm going to say it like this. Our body and our actions governed by our mind must be as Romans 12:1 says, to offer our bodies as a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable, holy, and pleasing to God, because this is your true and proper worship. And I've been saying this for years, that the songs that we sing are not worship by in and of itself. Worship is what you do at work. It's what you do at home. It's how you live your life. It can be driving down 431 and not flipping somebody off when they cut you off. That you submit to the Spirit, not the flesh. That's worship. And so we get to this point where we're struggling and it's difficult, but that's how you become a separate person. You present your bodies. You present them. You give them, and they become a living sacrifice. That's it. There's no way around that. Like, you can't be doing immoral things, immoral things, morally incorrect things, and think you're standing in the seat of righteousness. Just because I don't know that you're doing it. Just because your boss doesn't know that you're doing it. Or just because your employees don't know that you're doing it. Just because your wife or your husband doesn't know you're doing it. Or just because your parents doesn't know you're doing it. Because you've got them fooled. That, it doesn't work like that. You're not fooling God. God says you're either for me or you're against me. You're either on my side or you're on the other side. You're a friend or you're an enemy. Remember that coin? And so that's how we become a separate people. We're going to have to count the cost. We're going to have to look at this and go, you know what? I don't know that I really bargained for all this. This is not really what I was thinking. I just thought I was going to say this prayer, call myself a Christian, come to church on Sunday, sing a few songs, throw a few dollars in the plate, go out and just be nice to people sometimes. And you think that, because that's what you've been taught. But you wasn't taught that from the Word. You were taught that from the stage and behind the pulpits on Sunday mornings, because it's not popular to stand up here and say, you got to present your body as a living sacrifice. The things that you want don't matter no more, because you're no longer yours. To think that you are and to think that you're in control makes you hostile toward God. See, that ain't popular. That ain't going to get people coming through the doors every Sunday. But that's the reality of it. That's the reality of it. And so Romans 12:1 is kind of the culmination of everything else that we've read about, is that how do we become separate? Look, it's an obligation. You made it. I didn't make it for you. You didn't make it for me. I made it. I signed the dotted line. I signed my life away when I asked Jesus to become my Lord. That's the reality of it. I didn't just ask Him to become my Lord. I signed my life away. And my life becomes whatever He wants it to become. Whatever. If He wants me to become rich, I'll become rich. If He wants me to be poor, I'm going to be poor. If He wants me somewhere middle class, then I'll land somewhere middle class. If He wants me to go to Africa, I go to Africa. If He wants me to stay here, I stay here. If He wants me working over there, I go over there. And if He wants me working over yonder, I go over there. But I don't have a say-so. I think I do, but I don't. But I'm going to choose with my free will to do whatever it is that He has designed and prepared for me. And that's That's the hard part of it. I mean, would you think that it would be effective to go out here and share the gospel and say, listen, here's what Jesus asks. Everything. Sign this piece of paper and sign your life over that you'll no longer make decisions based on what you want. You'll no longer make decisions based on what's best for you. Your checking account becomes his checking account. Your house becomes his house. Your car becomes his car. Your free time becomes his free time. Here, where do you want to sign, Chuck? You're thinking, well, wait a minute now. And we're talking about lost people here. They're not going to go, hey, hand me that pen. Let me sign that piece of paper. They're going to be like, wait a second. That's not, I don't know if I'm ready for this. That's what Jesus was saying. Look, you better count the cost before you do this. Most of us never were given the opportunity to count the cost. Most of us were just presented a gospel that said, look, it's simple. Accept Jesus, go to heaven. Reject Jesus, go to hell. It's an either or. That's not the gospel. Does that make sense? That's the reward at the end of the gospel. The reality is that he's called us to be a separate people. And in order to be what he wants us to be, we have to be separate. Why? You said it a while ago. There's got to be a difference between the wheat and the tares. There's got to be a difference between light and darkness. He said it, not me. What do light and darkness have in common? Nothing. There's nothing in common with them. So how do you tell the difference between a sheep and a goat, or a wheat and a tare, or light and darkness? There's got to be something that separates the two. And it boils down to one thing. It's a lifestyle. It's the way you live your life. But we are to be called a separate people. I'm going to say amen to that.